with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
All right. Good evening again, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you remember and reclaim that which you have always been and always are. Very excited to be with you here this evening and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between. And just a quick reminder for everybody that every one of these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health. And I always, as you know me, if you've been following me for some time, I place all of this within the context, let's say the backdrop, of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. I'm Dr. James Houck, and so glad you tuned in this evening, and thank you for sharing this time together. And if you would like more information about me, to read up on me or otherwise, or maybe to leave me your comments about tonight's show, just invite you to visit that website. It is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That all gets run together. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Or my personal website is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So either way, either website, you'll be allowed to leave me your comments and any suggestions that you would like to hear, topics and themes and so forth. Okay. And if you'd like to call in and be part of the show this evening, I always welcome callers. And if you call in with any insights or questions or just general conversation on tonight's topic, please call, the toll-free line at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as always, I will be taking calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, that's okay, because this broadcast is going to be posted on the BBS Radio website, so you can go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. That's an easy find. Just go, look up my name under the website, and you will find me, and then you just go to scroll down a little bit, and you'll see the archives section. And also, just want to point out that these podcasts are also available for download if you happen to have iTunes or Audible or Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on the weekends at WNEW 102.7 FM, and they are out of New York. So glad to have them with us and glad that I am able to be a part of this as well. Now, another quick big shout out to every listener tonight that I'm in my sixth year with BBS Radio, and what a ride it has been. Where's the time gone? And I look forward to seeing what the next 6 years will bring. So again, to all the listeners, I am grateful for your support. Thank you for tuning in. And this is why I encourage you to drop me a line or shoot me an email or something. And just let me know how you're feeling, how everything's been going. And again, if there's a particular series or a theme or a subject you want to listen to, let me know that too. Okay. Well, when I started this series, Reclaiming Authenticity, I really wanted to emphasize the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, because one thing is for certain, I've not only seen through these broadcasts, but also through my own clinical practice, is that there is a growing awareness and a growing hunger out there for people to not only integrate their mental health issues with their spirituality, But also, how then do I apply, all of this to my spiritual growth within the context of relationships? And this is very important. It's just a combination that goes quite well, this integration of everything, because that's where we really live out our spirituality and our mental health issues, is it within relationships. Now, if anybody out there is a fan of Edgar Cayce, I came across one of his quotes this week. And Edgar Cayce, who you might remember, was considered to be the father of holistic medicine and the most documented psychic of the 20th century. Well, he once wrote that what is truly valuable in thought, in activity, and in our experience is the sense of appreciation, inner realization, and understanding of the self, namely the self in relation to others and the self in relation to God. And meditation is a means to this end. And I don't believe a whole lot in coincidences. I think I was meant to read this because it was just really refreshing, that Edgar Cayce, to highlight it, just the importance of the discovery of the self, but also putting it into the relationship that we have with others, and certainly God, and meditation is just a wonderful means to achieve this. Well, another person who was also very influential in my life was a Dr. Harold Koenig. He's currently the director of the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health. And I met him when I took a week-long seminar down there in the heart of North Carolina, and right within the triangle of the three most prominent universities, all within driving distance of each other. Well, he also notes that a person's religious and spiritual beliefs and practices are certainly important resources for, let's say, coping with illness or coping with trauma or coping with just life in general, stress and anxiety, depression, whatever, because there's been great research done in this area that demonstrates a connection between, let's say, your beliefs and your sense of well-being, such as your positive beliefs and the comfort you receive and the inner strength that is gained from your religion and spirituality, or meditation and prayer, just to name a few. Now, improving your spiritual health may not cure an illness, but it certainly will help your overall well-being, as well as you might feel a higher sense of purpose or peace or hope and meaning. You might experience having more self-confidence or improved self-esteem, and just being able to handle self-control a little bit more, just being easier to do that. And again, this is just to mention a few. So there are many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and our spirituality. And this is where I come in, because I have a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find the courage to reclaim what has always been in them, as well as remembering who they have always been and who they are currently, as that soul, as that eternal soul, as that vast soul. Because as I mentioned many times on this show, that I have a very solid belief that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life, in terms of, let's say, our giftedness, or our skills, or our talents, our strengths, our character traits, and so on and so on. Just the very best of who we are. And how we live our giftedness, let's say, in our strengths and so forth, is in and through various relationships, whether they are personal or professional. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts, or we may have similar skills or talents, or we may have similar strengths or character traits, no two people express these identically. So, in other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. People are going to try and imitate how we do things, and maybe when we were younger, we tried, to imitate, our heroes in life or people we really looked up to. But really, nobody has the ability to duplicate another person, because within us, lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hecheitas. It's a thisness. It's a uniqueness, if you will. And I always explain this to kids as, you know, in terms of a thumbprint. You know, that just as, you know, everybody has a thumbprint, everybody has strengths, everybody has character traits, everybody has gifts and skills and the best of who they are. But just as no two thumbprints are alike, well, that uniqueness, that hecheitas, everybody is different. And therein lies the importance of this realization of who we truly are. Well, welcome to tonight's show. That was kind of a long-winded introduction, but let's get into it, okay? Tonight's show is going to focus on the faith of the taproot, T-A-P-R-O-O-T, the faith of the taproot, anchored deep within. And when I thought about this show, and, you know, just as the theme was coming to me and so forth, you know, summer is just a time of getting out there and everything's in bloom. Okay. And a lot of people just enjoy the roses. And we even have that old traditional saying of, you know, you have to stop and smell the roses once in a while. Otherwise, you're going to miss the beauty that's always around you. And as I, you know, thought of this, the faith of the taproot, and we're going to get to that. And you know, that's a very important element here as we're talking about our spiritual growth as well. I was always reminded of just a very nice story that I forget how many years ago it was told to me. And it's like, I like that. I'm going to write that down. And the story goes like this. Once upon a time, you know, a spiritual master was walking with one of his students, and they were discussing spirituality. And the young student was troubled because, as many students are from time to time, he was impatient with what he perceived was his lack of spiritual progress. Because in his mind, he believed that he ought to be further along in his path for truth. I mean, he studied hard, he did everything his teacher asked him to do, but he still felt as though he should be further along. Well, at one point in their walk, the master and the student came to a beautiful garden of roses, all shapes and colors. It was just magnificent. And the master smiled as he pointed out the numerous colors and fragrances of the roses, each in their various stages of development. Well, this student, however, didn't fully understand what the master's point was in this lesson. Because, yes, as every excellent teacher knows, every moment is a teachable moment for us. Anyway, the master saw that his student was not understanding the you know, implied lesson here. So he picked a rose that was just in the early stages of its bloom. And he handed the rose to his student, and he asked him to open it. The student looked curiously at the rose, and then back at his master, and then back at the rose, and then back at the master. He was like, okay. And then he, you know, proceeded to use his finger and then fingers to gently push the rose open. Now, to his surprise, the rose started to fall apart, and did not resemble any of the other beautiful roses in full bloom. In fact, when the student was done, many petals had fallen onto the ground, and essentially the rose was ruined. And the master gently smiled back as he took the rose, you know, back from the student and let him see it again. You know, and he told his student that you cannot force roses to bloom because they bloom in their own time. And someday, he too will bloom in God's time and through God's grace. And even though roses are still in their buds and have yet to bloom, they're still roses because they are connected to their roots, anchored firmly in the ground, receiving all the water and nourishment that they need from the sun and the soil and so forth. Now, of course, when roses have opened and are in their full bloom, that fragrance is enjoyed by everybody because they have reached a point of maturity. And a student finally understood that lesson. And he interpreted everything as then, like, okay, my role then was to continue in his faithful integration of his knowledge and his personal experiences and his studies. He was to continue to discover his uniqueness or his hachiatos and to develop his skills and to stay anchored to his roots, to his faith, and his spiritual foundation. And trusting in God's grace, and over time, he too would blossom. Well, let's be honest with ourselves here this Wednesday evening. How often do we get caught up in the hurry up to bloom stage and forget that even in a budding stage, we're still growing? And if we're faithful to integrating our spiritual practices and our experiences along with our, say, daily awareness of truth and God's grace, transformation is inevitable. And this is something that I always taught my students when I was, teaching and training others to go into the mental health profession. We talked quite a bit about transformation. And, my main point with my students was, be faithful to this integration. Be faithful to integrating all your experiences and who you are and your knowledge and your skills and so forth, because the more you are faithful to that whole integration process, transformation is going to occur. Absolutely. Transformation is inevitable. Well, as a mental health and trauma clinician, I also see this kind of impatience in my clients who want to hurry up and just get through counseling. Because after all, they just want to feel better. And I completely understand that. However, many times I need to reassure them that their psychological, their emotional, and even spiritual healing cannot be rushed because their healing must be thorough. It must be complete. Where have you yet to forgive somebody? Where is bitterness still clinging to you? Where is your lack of gratitude showing up in your life and so forth? Because that's very telling. And there's a healing that needs to take place with that. But again, the importance of be faithful to the integration, be faithful to the counseling process, because the more you are, transformation is inevitable. You will find your healing. But again, I still run into some people that believe they're doing something wrong because they don't see the changes fast enough for themselves. And like I said, it's true that many people just want to feel better and as quickly as possible. But truth be told, healing takes time. Transformation takes time. In fact, many times, a person's spiritual growth occurs as they are engaged in an unlearning, learning stage. And this is what I mean. I talk to a lot of people in therapy who, need to unlearn assumptions about how the world or God should work for them, or they need to unlearn childhood or adolescent patterns that they just grew up with thinking, well, that's normal, until they realize, like, no, I grew up in a highly dysfunctional home. How do I unlearn all that? And then how do I relearn healthier relationships? People also need to unlearn habits or other behaviors that have led them down unhealthy mental, emotional, or spiritual paths. And they need to let go of the roles that they took on that have created certain dysfunctions in the family. Certainly if people grew up in like an addictive household, whether it be, alcohol or drugs or pornography or gambling or food addictions or whatever it is, people learn how to adapt to that in order to survive the chaos in the family. And that takes a long process to unlearn those things and to recognize, first of all, where they're coming from, but then to like, okay, now what do I do with it? And finally, others, still others, will need to unlearn, their own, self-sabotaging behaviors based on relationship wounds that they've suffered in the past. So, yet all the while people are unlearning these and other unhealthy aspects, they're going to also need to relearn and reclaim those life-giving aspects of themselves. Because if there's one thing I wish for you to take away from this particular program, it's this. The more faithful we are to life-giving spiritual integration with our mental health and so on, sooner or later, life-giving spiritual transformation, mental health, and our emotional health is going to occur. And a key ingredient for any spiritual integration is the element of hope, especially when it comes to making sense of our lives and healing from things that we've gone through. There's another great quote by Thomas Merton that I came across earlier this week. Thomas Merton was an American Trappist monk. He was a writer, a theologian, a mystic, a poet, social activist, and a scholar. That really, this quote really captures the essence of hope that is needed along a spiritual journey. And he titled this writing, Seize the Day. And he writes, I have no idea where I'm going. I don't see the road ahead of me. I can't know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think that I'm following your will, O God, doesn't mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does, in fact, please you. And the hope I have is that desire in everything that I am doing pleases you. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, I will always, always trust you, though I may seem to be lost at times and in the shadow of death. I will not fear you, for I know that you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. Like I said, a pretty powerful quote from Thomas Merton. And, in all truth, what Merton is saying here is that he doesn't need to see where his life is going or will go, because that's not where his hope lies. But rather, his hope lies squarely in the relationship that he has with God. And I love that section where he says, but I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. And I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. So that's my favorite part of the Thomas Merton quote. But speaking of hope, there's an old saying out there that goes like this. It says, we can live 30 days without food. We can live about 3 weeks without water. We can go about 3-ish minutes without oxygen, but we cannot live 3 seconds without hope. I mean, hope is that powerful. Hope is that transformative nature in us and through us. But the true lesson is that we need to examine, in what and in whom we place our hope in. And if there's ever a group of people who exemplify hope on a daily basis, a practical basis, it's the people who farm. Our farmers. Think about it. They till the soil, they remove the rocks and other obstacles that would get in the way of having a healthy crop. Then they plant the seed and cover it back up with soil and, water where they need to, fertilize and so forth. But all this is done by faith, in the hope that with the addition of sun, water, and nature's fertilizer, that seed will produce wonderful crops. Everybody needs hope. It's just part of us, something ingrained in us, from birth. But what we hope in and in what we hope for, well, that could either bring us misery or it's going to bring us peace. But many people are taught that material things will be happiness that they're seeking, and it'll bring that contentment. If only I can have this, then I will be satisfied. I won't want for anything else. Well, I've never met anybody in which that statement was true. And there's nothing wrong with having material things. I mean, we all need food and clothing and shelter. We all need security and achievements and goals and so on and so forth. But I have to share that I sit down with a lot of people who, by all outward appearances, have it all together. But inside themselves, they're miserable. True, money doesn't necessarily buy you happiness, and it does provide things that people need, but it certainly doesn't quell those storms that rage within us. Which, by the way, brings us back to the analogy of roses. Well, have you ever watched a rose bush during a storm? Maybe there's one outside your window or something, and as the storm is coming through, the branches are swaying back and forth by the wind, and the petals are just flying and being stripped away by the pounding rain and just carried by the wind and all that stuff. And as the storm continues, it doesn't look like the rose bush is going to survive, but after the storm has passed, it looks all pitiful and bare and gnarly. But beneath the surface, deep within the earth, that rosebush is still alive. It's alive and well because it is firmly anchored by its root system. So, how is this possible? It's all due to the fact that the rosebushes have a taproot system, TAPROOT, taproot system. And a taproot system is a type of plant root system, which is characterized by a large, central, and dominant root that grows vertically downward, with then smaller lateral roots branching off of it. I mean, it's really fascinating if you ever happen to dig one up and you just see that taproot, and all these other little branches, roots are, shooting off from it, and that's not by accident. It's designed that way. And this particular root system, the taproot system, contrasts with the, let's say, fibrous root systems, which consist of many thin roots of similar sizes. And whereas a fibrous root system forms kind of like a dense network of roots that are closer to the soil surface, that's designed that way as well. And the crops that are grown that have this fibrous root system are, crops like wheat and rice, even corn. These are classic examples of this fibrous root system. But yet, on the other hand, a taproot system has a single main root that grows downward, such as what we see in carrots and beets and parsnips and radishes. The interesting, thing about this, that I found out later through doing a little bit of research, is that the tree with the strongest taproot system is the shepherd's tree, which ironically grows in the Kalahari Desert in Africa. And the scientists at Rutgers University out here in New Jersey, have documented that this particular taproot system reaches a depth of over 20, or I'm sorry, 230 feet, which is crucial for accessing groundwater in those arid environments. And it makes perfect sense, and it just, I just sit there and marvel at that life always continues to find a way. Even, let's say, in the dead of winter, when all the flowers and the fruit trees seem to die. But there's still life going on underground. And it's in this timing, and again, by God's grace, that we're going to see the shoots come up again in the spring. And these trees and the flowers will bud and blossom and will bear its fruit and fragrance for everybody to enjoy, especially in the summer. Now, of course, the life of any plant or flower is in its roots. The healthier the soil, the stronger the roots, the more life continues. Well, have you ever tried to tear out the roots of a rose bush? Good luck with that one. Those roots go down deep, probably about 3 or more feet, and they also spread out about 3 feet, the whole way around. And this is why they can weather the most severe storms, and they're going to come back year after year after year because of this strong root system. And I also see this in, mental health and the healing that people are looking for in their lives, that whenever a person suffers from a traumatic incident or a tremendous loss of some kind, they often sit and wonder, how am I ever going to be able to put the pieces of my life back together? How do I start? Where do I start? What will my life look like afterwards? And will I ever feel alive again? Now, when I hear questions like this from people, I don't get down on one knee and start singing a verse from Little Orphan Annie. The sun will come out tomorrow. That's just being totally insensitive. But the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual healing is not a pie-in-the-sky Pollyanna way of looking at life. But instead, it's a promise that following every storm in our lives, yes, that sun will come out again. Healing can occur. And we will find our life and our strength because our roots are anchored in relationships and our spiritual roots that are eternal, and they're not temporal. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this matter. So again, if you'd like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Right, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, I just wanted to say that earlier in the show, if you're with me, you remember I shared a story about how a young student tried to force open a budding rose to bloom, perhaps much in the same way that he himself, I wanted to hurry up and force his spiritual growth, my spiritual growth. And how often we want to be in a hurry is because we believe we're not growing fast enough. Like, how long is this going to take, and so on and so forth. But it's not about how fast we grow, but rather how strong our roots are. Similar to the taproot system of a rose bush. And when we have strong roots and are faithful to the process of integration of truth with our personal experiences and God's grace and timing and so forth, transformation and growth is going to occur. I mean, even in a budding stage, we are growing. And if we're faithful to integrating our spiritual practices with our experiences, along with a daily awareness of truth and God's grace, again, transformation is inevitable. It's going to happen. Well, here we are, the next to the last day in July. And can you believe we're going to be in August soon, on Friday? Summer is often the time when couples want to get married because, the weather is assumed to be nicer and lots of flowers and love is in the air, of course. And it's kind of interesting that the most requested scripture reading that I hear in wedding ceremonies is often taken from the book of 1 Corinthians, the 13th, in the Bible. And that's often considered to be like the love chapter. Okay. And maybe you've heard it. You know, it goes like this. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy. It does not boast. Love is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but always rejoices in the truth. Excuse me there. I had to take a drink. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be silent. Where there is knowledge, it too will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when the completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now, we see only a reflection, as in a mirror, but then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three things remain: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. You know, perhaps this is why at weddings, when it comes to expressing a love like that to the one that we're marrying, the one that, you know, we've been betrothed to, or the one that we've been engaged to for a while, roses are often the most appropriate flower. Right? Now, call me weird, but I prefer tiger lilies, but that's just me. Okay. Some other time I'll share with you why I prefer tiger lilies. Okay. But I get the roses. I get the roses. I love the colors. I love the white roses, yellow roses, or perhaps my favorite color rose, of course, red roses and, you know, others. Well, you know, this 13th chapter of Corinthians, you know, as I said, is often read at weddings because it symbolizes how love weathers life's most severe storms and trauma in our life. And yet, how is it that love is the strongest out of faith and hope? Because, you know, faith and hope are very strong in our lives. But what is it about love? You know, more importantly, what is it about God's unconditional love for us that is the strongest? Because unconditional love sees the potential for people to become far greater than who they're able to see in themselves in the present moment. Love sees the possibility of people healing from their emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual woundedness. And it's true. With that kind of a love, yes, love is patient and love is kind. Love seeks to honor others first. And the only record that it keeps is the life-giving moments in our lives. Love celebrates the truth. Love always protects. Love always trusts. Love always hopes. And love always perseveres. And love is able to do this because it teaches us not to look at the temporary things in our lives, but instead focus on the potential for hope and healing and grace and inner joy. Those things are eternal. Or, again, another quote I found from Henry Nouwen, just a wonderful theologian and monastic. He writes that the reason why God's love is unconditional is because it existed before any kind of rejection was possible, and that kind of love, God's love, will still be there after all the rejections have taken place. It is the first and everlasting love of God, who is our Father as well as our Mother. It is the fountain of all human love. And in the Gospels, Jesus' whole life and message was to reveal this inexhaustible, unlimited motherly and fatherly love of God, as well as to show us how to let that love guide every part of our lives. Which then again brings us back to relationships. Right? You know, roses and their taproot systems, you know, are just a great reminder to us about our own spiritual growth. And as with any example of any kind of vegetation, you know, as I shared before the break, that once a seed is planted in the soil, the roots have to first go down and anchor themselves firmly in the soil before any appearance of life shows up above ground. The roots have to first go down, and that's life. There's a connection there. And when it's firmly connected, then the plant or the tree or the rose bush will break through above ground. You know, without a strong root system or a foundation, the life of a rose bush is limited because storms will come and it will pull up the entire thing. And we all know, you know, if we've lived through storms and so forth, with their high gusty winds and just the rain and the power of water, that those things can uplift entire trees. And within our own spiritual lives, to what and to whom we are spiritually rooted makes all the difference in the world. Because as I have said many times in these broadcasts, that when it comes to the integration of mental health and our spirituality, it always comes back to relationships. I mean, there's just no two ways of getting around it. You know, and the irony, as I've talked about before, the irony of life is that we often experience our psychological and emotional and physical and spiritual wounds being in relationships. But for us to truly heal and to grow, we need to find these things in healthier relationships. And it all begins with the person that we look at in the mirror. It all begins with our relationship with ourselves. Well, as I talked about a couple of weeks ago, you know, because we're so connected with each other, in fact, we're so connected to all things, you know, this is oneness, that whenever we wound another person with our actions, or with our thoughts, or with our words, we end up wounding ourselves. And when others wound us, they, in a sense, have wounded themselves. This is a fact we can't get around. This is something that I, you know, again, share with kids. You know, it's like we live in an echo, that whatever we send out with our thoughts, our words, or our actions, it's going to come back to us. You know, so I often send them on a little homework of like, find, you know, an echo somewhere and shout your name, you know, or shout like, I love people, or I love my parents, or, you know, and not only listen to the words coming back to them, but how does it make you feel knowing that what you send out will come back to you? And the same is true with the negative stuff that we send out there. So, I, you know, their homework is like, you know, say three positive things to an echo and listen for them to come back. And how do you feel? What's coming up in you? Of which words make you smile? And then after that, they're to say three very hurtful things to the echo, either about themselves or about somebody else. And also, listen to the words that are coming back. And how did that make you feel? Which of those words made you frown, made you sad? It works both ways. And that's just a fact of life. We live in an echo. So whatever we send out is going to come back to us. All the more reason to pay attention to our thoughts. All the more reason to watch what we say. All the more reasons to not lash out. We have just ill-intended behavior. Again, a fact that we just cannot get around. And so, which is all the more reason why we need to stay connected in healthy relationships with ourselves, with others, and God or the divine. Now, there's also a story out there, probably one of my favorite stories that when I read the Bible, it's a story, actually, it's a parable that Jesus told his disciples about the need to be firmly rooted in their connection with him. And it's the story or the parable of the vine and the branches. And I believe that's found in John chapter 15. Okay. But in that particular parable, Jesus said, I am the vine. You are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. For without me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he's cast out as a branch and it's going to wither. And then they gather them and they throw them into the fire and then they are all burned. But if you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it shall be done for you. And by this my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit. Now, there's more to this parable. I only read a brief passage, but what I find interesting is that within the entire 9 verses of John chapter 15, that the word abide, or in some translation, it says remain, it appears 8 times. 8 times in 9 verses. I mean, that's pretty significant. That's something worth paying attention to. Why is it repeated so often? Remain in me, abide in me, abide in my words, and whoever remains in me will bear much fruit. What's with the emphasis? Well, I believe that what's being said here is just as the branches cannot produce flowers or fruit unless they remain connected to the vine and the root. So too do we need to be, we need to remain connected to our spiritual roots. I mean, even if you cannot make sense of what you see or hear or feel above ground, let's say, so to speak, rest assured that there is life in you because your roots are firmly anchored in the soul. And translate that into spiritual terms, and you get the meaning. I mean, never, ever, ever, ever give up on the ability of God's grace to work in you and through you. Even if you don't feel like you're making enough spiritual progress to suit you, remember that story of the master and his student and the rose. By forcing ourselves to go faster without proper integration and through God's grace, we too are going to end up making a mess of things. We have to be patient. We have to be faithful. We have to trust that process of integration. But if you have strong spiritual roots and are firmly anchored in your relationship with God or the divine, you will see your wonderful hachaetos. You will see your excellent thisness and this uniqueness is going to emerge, which will be a blessing and a healing for all relationships, personal and professional. I mean, never allow life to take away what matters most, your hope, your dreams, your peace, your relationship, and relationships. It's kind of the song that Fantine sang in Les Miserables. Life had killed the dream in me. And she was just pouring out her heart in that song, like, I'm in utter despair. I have no more hope. For what I thought and how my life was going to turn out never did. And so it just crushed me. And she allowed this hope to wither and die. Never allow life to take away what matters most to you in terms of your hope, your dreams, your peace, and your relationships. That's just to name a few. But bitterness, unforgiveness, and contempt for others. Take these things away. It does take away your hope. It does take away your dreams and your peace, and it does start to eat away at your relationships. All these things will fade away. All will wither for lack of spiritual nourishment or for lack of healing of past wounds. And the worst thing you and I can do is to allow something to die within us while we are living on this earth. And apart from food and clothing and shelter, which everybody needs, the real issues that we cannot afford to live without are hope, love, gratitude, inner peace, grace, and treating one another as souls. These virtues are the true life-giving gifts that nourish and sustain the soul that far exceeds any kind of material possession. But a spiritual life that's anchored firmly in a relationship with God or the divine compels us to be in our own daily nurturing with one another. The reason for this emphasis is because let's just take the spirituality and bring it down into like say religious practices or daily religious practices. These ceremonies and the rituals contain deeper levels of meaning, and they help us anchor our faith deeper into our, let's say, spiritual foundation. We all are spiritual. We all have these overarching beliefs. We all have the overarching questions. And how we live out our spirituality is often, going down the road of a particular religion, let's just say, okay, because religions contain the rituals or the ceremonies, okay, that just it puts our spirituality with a little bit of flesh on it so that we can like, okay, now I get it. Now I see the strength of why it's important to be in relationship with others, and why did I hang on to that unforgiveness for so long? When all the time I had the key. What was I hanging on to it for? Why was I hanging on to bitterness? Why was I hanging on to my rage? Whatever it is, let go of those things so that you can take on something better. And succeeding generations need to learn the relevance that this spiritual nurturing has for them to live in their soul consciousness, let's just say, and from a place of forgiveness, gratitude, and love. Because when these three seeds have been planted in your heart and bear fruit in your life, I guarantee you, nothing from that moment on you'll ever take for granted. Not one breath, not one hug, not one kiss, not one sip of water, nor one opportunity to bring healing from trauma in another person's life, because everything and everyone is connected. Yes, you come into the world already equipped and graced with everything you need for in this life. You will never convince me otherwise. And just because you may not be able to see your giftedness yet, let's just say, does not mean that it's not there in you. So, if you're not at peace with your spiritual progress, send your roots deeper into your relationship with God and ask God to develop within you your giftedness, your skills, your talents, your strengths, your character traits, so on and so forth. Help me see what you see. Help me see myself as you see me. Divine love is eternal, not conditional, which helps us to purify our limited understanding by recognizing only that which is divine in all things and in all people. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. It can be summed up in one simple word, namaste. Because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if in the present moment you have yet to see it in yourself. That potential is there. Well, you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I was your host, Dr. James Hauck, and thank you again for choosing to spend this hour with me. And again, I am just so grateful that when people shoot me an email or give me some feedback, not just on this particular broadcast, but other broadcasts as well. So I will talk to everybody once again in 2 weeks. I look forward to another broadcast of Reclaiming Authenticity. But in the meantime, may you stop and smell the roses. Be good to yourself. Celebrate the wins in your life and heal the wounds that may still plague you. Everybody, have a good night. God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.